Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of One Perfect Game, the show about video games and the people who play them. My name's Matt Tilby. I'm your host for this wonderful adventure. Come and join us. Well, ladies and gentlemen, my guest this week is a content creator, a journalist, and I guess an on-screen personality for SB Nation. You can see him on their YouTube channel producing some pretty interesting sports content, which I can probably get the man himself to explain a little bit better. His name is Seth Rosenthal, and he joins me all the way from New York. Seth, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's an interesting channel, I guess, in many respects, because it's the more interesting side of sport. You've got a lot of things that, I guess, chronicle interesting moments, particular rivalries, and sort of the odder or more odd side of sport. How would you explain the content that you make for someone who probably hasn't seen SB Nation stuff before?
Yeah, it's certainly changed a lot within the last year and a half or so, which is basically about the same time I've been involved, which is a coincidence. But I think of SB Nation's YouTube channel as sort of a companion to actual sports, what's actually happening in the world. You know, we're not there to talk about the news necessarily, or try to keep up, or catch people's attention, or do anything like that, or analyze what's going on in the regular world. But if you're someone who's interested in sports in present day, then our belief and our mission is sort of to give you something to supplement that, whether that's you know, interesting and exciting and funny stories, whether that's explaining some element of sports, or whether that's, you know, just experimenting and throwing something at the wall and seeing if it aids your appreciation of sports. So you'll see us. And the other thing is that I think the mission recently has been to make videos that will stay good and interesting for a long time, because I in particular have played the game of trying to keep up, and especially with video content, that's really, really hard. Everything you make is permanent in a way that the written word isn't. And so it sucks to make something and to produce it and edit it and have it all come together and post it in this indelible way and, you know, see it become obsolete. So we're really trying to make what, you know, what they call evergreen stuff, stuff that's about history, or just stuff that's about basic truths, or stuff that's written in such a way that if you watch it today, tomorrow, a year from now, or 5 years from now, it should still be interesting and enlightening and worthwhile.
Yeah, it sort of ties into that, the content that you'd been sort of reporting on, especially like, say, for example, Rewinders, or a lot of the Beef History episodes that you had been a part of. Mm-hmm. Lots of very classic moments, and sort of long-lasting rivalries that really sort of stood the test of time. Do you find that those ones are probably the more interesting and a little bit more, they resonate with you a lot, especially for someone like you, who I should point out is, for the listeners at home, you're a big basketball tragic. You're a big basketball fan. So do you feel like you enjoy those real classic moments a little bit more than, say, something in the present day?
It's more fun to write on. You know, I would rather watch tonight's game than a game from 10 years ago. But in terms of trying to make something accessible and digestible to an audience, I'm not worried about more or less, but I know I've had a ton of fun going back to, like you said, the two big series I've created are Beef History and Rewinder, and for either of those, it's going back to something from my childhood, or even just from a few years ago, or from before I was born, and really digging into the news of the time and the whatever video clips are available, and reading what people have written since, and doing a number of things, you know, shining light on stuff that hasn't really made its way to the internet yet, filling in my own knowledge with just tons of things that I didn't realize at the time because I was a kid or because a lot of time has passed, and hopefully doing the same for people who are watching in a way that, like I said, augments one's ability to appreciate sports and, you know, the games involved today. Whenever possible, if someone who's still in the picture shows up in something I'm writing that's about history, I try to at least call them out a little bit. Like, hey, you know, this is an Allen Iverson reminder. Well, Tyronn Lue, the guy he's playing against in this, you know, classic moment from the finals, you know, this is someone who's still, or at least was until recently, a head coach and will probably get a job again. And so, you know, understanding stuff from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s will inevitably give you a little bit of insight into understanding today.
And I guess the one thing I wanted to ask as well was, obviously there's a core group of guys who are acting as on-screen talent for those sort of episodes, yourself, Will Bukema, Mike Imhoff. What goes into, I guess, creating those episodes? Like, let's say, for example, how long would you say it takes on average from creating an episode to having it sort of fully released? Like, how long would you say that sort of process takes?
Yeah, so myself, Will, Mike, Alex Rubenstein, we're all the producers. John Boyes is as well, but he's sort of off doing his own thing. And the four of us, we each have very different backgrounds, but we've sort of supplemented each other's skills and taught each other enough that we've converged onto basically the same process, which is we meet, we talk about which shows we want to do for the month, you know, try to sketch out which episodes of the shows we want to do, and then we write outlines, we check each other's outlines, you know, each of us has something different that we bring to the table. My background is as a writer. Will and Mike both come from a video background. Alex knows by far the most about sports of any of us and has sort of an encyclopedic knowledge base that allows him to offer a lot of help in checking facts and making sure everything is covered. We outline stuff. I'll write an outline and, you know, with a little bit of research done, and if everyone likes it, I'll try to turn around a script within maybe 3 or 4 days, like a week, and then we'll shoot something, and usually if you researched and wrote the episode, then you'll host it as well. And then that usually gets passed off to either one or two video editors or motion graphics artists, depending on the show, and they'll try to turn it around in a week also. So an episode of Rewinder, Beef History, usually a week and a half, 2 weeks, sometimes maybe a little longer than that if it's a really long one, but because we've got really, really great editors and motion graphics guys working on that stuff. But yeah, it's usually like a 2 or 3 man job at most. It's a pretty small group we have.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the guys that you'd sort of documented there, it seems like everyone has their sort of specialty sport as well. Obviously, your basketball, Will seems to focus a lot on ice hockey and football, sort of the same with Alex. Do you find that having a more diverse knowledge base helps you guys sort of cover a lot of your bases?
It does. I mean, I would love for us to get more diverse in a number of ways, but it's nice because I don't have to do stuff I don't like. I don't like football. I understand it, and I watched it when I was younger, and I've written on it before and could, I think, happily and capably do so again. But I'd much rather write about basketball, baseball, but, you know, the NBA more than anything. And so Will's love of hockey and football and stuff allows me to just do the stuff that gets me really excited. And, you know, that makes such a big difference to be able to work on something that you're genuinely passionate about and not just doing for the sake of doing it, which we, you know, it's work. We all have to do that sometimes. But it is nice that we are not completely overlapped in our backgrounds and our knowledge bases and our interests, because it allows us to each, I think, pursue the things that we're genuinely excited about. And I think that makes for a better product.
Well, the thing you're obviously excited about is, of course, basketball. And I guess we probably should talk about the elephant in the room. You are a big New York Knicks fan.
Yeah.
And I will not judge personally, because I myself am a Phoenix Suns fan. So it's been a tough season for both of us. But a bit of a review for the regular season, as it's just finished. At the time of the recording, the playoffs have just started. But for both of us, our teams, we both stand a pretty good chance of landing Mr. Zion Williamson. Do you feel a bit nervous, a bit anxious going into the draft? Do you think that there's going to be some typical New York Knicks chicanery going on at draft day?
The thing is, everything is so unlikely that I don't even feel nervous. The Knicks have a 14% chance of getting the first pick, which statistically means they will not get the first pick. So I have nothing to be nervous about. They'll get something in the top five. They'll hopefully draft someone okay. I like a couple other guys in the draft. And so, I am looking forward to the draft, and I'm apprehensive about the Knicks because they're the Knicks. But the particular, you know, the lottery and who they pick, I'm just not that worried about, because the odds are stacked against them, and it's not like it's going to be a huge loss if they end up falling. I guess it'll be a huge loss if they end up falling and draft someone who sucks, but hopefully that doesn't happen.
If the Knicks don't end up landing Zion, or they do a very odd choice and pick someone who isn't Zion, is there someone in that draft that you think you'd like to see them pick?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's surprising to say that John Morant from Murray State, especially on a team that's really confused about what it wants at point guard and has been for a really long time, would be awesome. I also he didn't really play it all this year, but Darius Garland from Vanderbilt is a player who I think would have been on the same footing as John Morant if he hadn't been injured all year. And there's Jared Culver from Texas Tech, who, you know, really showed out well in the NCAA tournament, is really good. But the Knicks are in a situation where they basically have no players. You know, they have very few, or basically none of their rotation spots set in stone for going forward. So they are not limited by position. They are not limited by timeline. They should just take whoever they like best. And it seems like it'll be a pretty strong draft, but it's very hard to say.
Yeah, I was going to say the Duke supporting cast as well. Your RJ Barrett's, your Cam Reddish's. Do you feel like they could possibly provide something to the team, or do you feel like that'll be sort of they looking a little bit more for a position-based player rather than sort of just an overall talent?
Yeah, I would think that they should be looking for an overall talent, because, like I said, there's no real lineup into which they're inserting anyone they draft. I happen to not love Barrett or Reddish as a prospect, but certainly, you know, especially as they fall closer to five and further from one, either of those guys would seem like a pretty sensible pick. You know, my not liking someone is not grounds for them being undraftworthy. I have pretty bad judgment in these things.
Mr. Rosenthal, the GM here. The other thing, obviously, is free agency. And there's always been this talk, especially, I guess, since the All-Star break, that they're going to be landing someone pretty big in free agency, whether it is Mr. Durant or Mr. Irving or someone else. Do you feel like you stand a good chance of landing someone?
I mean, it's another thing where, statistically speaking, and we're going off of precedent rather than actual odds here, the Knicks never get the big free agent. It's never happened. And so, you know, my whole life has been every two or three summers, this is the year, this is the guy, they're going to finally do it, all the rumors are pointing in the right direction, and it's never actually happened. The biggest ticket free agents never actually want to come to New York. However, the degree of chatter, the degree of certainty that you hear from both anonymous sources and people who are willing to put their names to things, that's surrounding, especially the idea of Durant going to the Knicks, I have never seen a volume of hype and of certainty of a Knicks signing quite like this. People really seem certain. And I'm talking not about Knicks fans, but about reporters and their sources and stuff. People really seem to be getting the idea that Kevin Durant's going to come to the Knicks. I refuse to stake any hopes on that. I know better than this at this point. And I do hope that when he eventually goes somewhere, Knicks fans don't get mocked for it, because I think we are all showing incredible restraint and not giving ourselves over to this fantasy. But yeah, the smoke around what we hope is an actual fire has, I've never seen it at this volume, especially months before free agency actually starts. So we'll see about that. It would be cool. He's good.
Yeah. I mean, being a Phoenix fan, I know all too well about, being unable to find any sort of decent free agents, but, I guess we'll move on a bit in that regard. But, of course, Seth, I brought you here today as we are on a games podcast, One Perfect Game, to talk about a game in particular that had influenced you either in your personal life or your career. But firstly, in general, I just wanted to ask about your sort of introduction to games or your first memory of gaming in general. Obviously, you're more of a sporting guy, but surely there must have been something that had really sort of been influential to you in your childhood or growing up through your youth, I guess.
Definitely. I was never, I think just because of my parents, I didn't have a ton of access to video games, especially when I was much younger. But I went over to friends' houses and played N64 and stuff and always enjoyed it. And I got a PlayStation when I was probably 8 or 9 years old, so like maybe 1998. I got a PlayStation at exactly the wrong time. Whatever year N64 came out, I got a PlayStation like 2 months before that. I don't know what year that was, but anyway, so in between that and I had a PlayStation, I had just like an old Mac, and I had Game Boy Color. And I played a bunch of different sports games between those. I loved playing backyard baseball. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes, I definitely am.
On PC,
yeah.
Which is an quietly incredible sports game. Backyard baseball, backyard soccer as well, where like the gameplay was really good. You could do, there was customization of characters and teams that existed long before you saw that in actual video games.
And the sort of draft idea, I thought, was very unique. Yeah,
it was. All of those games were super ahead of their time. And so that was probably my very first sports gaming experience. I had some sort of Ken Griffey Jr. baseball game on Game Boy also that I loved. But the big one for me was NBA Live. And I think the first one I owned was the one with Tim Duncan on the cover. And I can never remember. I guess that would be 99. Or 2000. I can never keep it straight in my head, but
I've just checked. It's 2000. Yes.
Yeah. 2000. And that was, you know, right when I got a PlayStation, that was the first and maybe only, besides like Gran Turismo, I had, that was the only sports game I had. And I played that for years. I played that well past other ones got released. And so I've put in a lot of hours playing that particular edition of that game, which was terrific.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I guess, around that sort of early 2000s era was probably like the, I guess, the golden era for a lot of the sort of sports games, especially the EA Sports ones and the 2K ones. Did you sort of continue, when you got the chance, did you tend to sort of jump onto other sporting titles? Or did you set, like you said, you'd sort of continue with that one for quite a number of years?
Right. I mean, I never got anything nicer than the PlayStation, so it was that for a while. But then a decade after that, I went to college and, you know, I lived with people who had an Xbox. So I would play, obviously not live anymore, but 2K for unseemly amounts of time, and also a ton of FIFA. FIFA at least when I was in college, was the game to like play with other people. It wasn't Madden. It wasn't 2K among my friends. It was, no matter what sport you liked in real life, it was FIFA. I think maybe because it's the most accessible if you're not really a gamer, and it maybe has the levelest playing field. But that was, you know, every house I lived in, every dorm I lived in college, and friends of mine, and, you know, every time you went to anyone's place, if it was just like a bunch of dudes sitting around on a Thursday night being dumb, that was the thing to do, was play FIFA. And so I got really into that in college. And it was funny because, like, in college, FIFA was the thing you played with people. I played NBA 2K, you know, on someone else's machine, on someone else's game, but I would play that by myself and just play, you know, create a player and play seasons at a time and just sort of lose myself to that.
Did you find that a lot of your sort of gaming experiences with your friends became quite competitive? Because I'm sort of in the boat where a lot of my games of FIFA or games of 2K or whatnot were usually ending up with someone saying, "Oh, that was fucking rigged. That was that was BS. That was, you know, like there'd always be a bit of a heated discussion, so to speak." But yeah, I'm sure your sort of experiences with a lot of your sporting games ended in the same way.
Initially, yes. My freshman and sophomore year of college, and, you know, as a kid, of course, absolutely lots of thrown controllers, lots of rage quitting and whatnot. It's funny, though, because my junior and senior year of college, I lived with the same person who's still one of my best friends. And we just took to each other really well, which is why we're still so close. And I am not a particularly competitive person, and I'm not someone who gets angry about games. I really just want to zone out and relax. And so the two of us, my friend Dan and I, would sit in his room, fire up FIFA on his Xbox, and play three or four games in a row without even really paying attention to what the score was. We would just sit there and talk, and it's hard to describe, but, you know, you kind of get used to someone's style of play in a game. And we played so much, and we would play super aggressive FIFA. We would both foul constantly, exclusively slide tackle. and we would do it sort of instinctively and without it just got to the point that I could do it without thinking or paying attention. And so we would just put on music and zone out and play FIFA for like an hour straight. And at the end of it, neither of us could tell you who won or lost each game, because it was meditative almost. And it was like we were just sitting there watching TV and our thumbs were just sort of minding their own business. And even like, he lives in Philadelphia now, I live in New York. I'll go visit him every summer and we'll sit down and do the same thing. We just kind of, it's like a nice vehicle for us to like relax and unwind and talk. And the game becomes completely secondary. It's like the least competitive thing you could think of.
That's the most unusual, most bizarre sort of FIFA experience I think I've ever heard of. Because I did, in fact, one of our earlier episodes, I did interview Australian comedian by the name of Matt O'Kine, who he picked FIFA 07 as his sort of game of choice. And he was basically saying that there was lots of tournaments, lots of broken controllers, and it just seems like the general discourse of games like FIFA and games like NBA, where you really can't finish without sort of some argument taking place. But so you might be the only person in history that has such a very peaceful experience almost.
Yeah. Listen, I've been there too, but the meditative, totally super confrontational in the game, but non-confrontational in real life version of FIFA is definitely one in which I've found a lot of comfort.
Do you find now, obviously, after your college days, where you've sort of played a lot of sports with friends, do you find the time to ever sort of jump into the newer sports titles, or is your time sort of taken up a lot with SB Nation?
So I don't have any video games at home, and I think that's basically me realizing that I could, just based on my college habits, that I could easily lose myself to a video game and stop taking care of my body and my life. But I still play FIFA. I have a couple friends who have it in their apartments, and I'll go over and we'll play. I have one of my other best friends who lives in New York. My relationship with him is I go to his place, we play FIFA, he kicks the shit out of me like 3 times in a row, and then I get tired of it and stop playing. Like he'll beat me 4-0 or 5-0 a bunch of times in a row, and then I stop. And it doesn't really bother me. And like I said, I'm just not competitive in that way, but it gets a little boring at that point.
Yeah.
It's funny. I actually, one of my good friends who no longer lives in New York is a guy named Charlie, who actually is on basketball Twitter as well. He works for the Clippers now. But when he lived in Brooklyn, I used to go over to his place, and he would do like a 2K draft, which is almost as fun as playing the game, is to do a draft and like build a roster. And to the point that like I had friends in college who would just do the draft and then not just like simulate seasons to see what happened and not even play. But that's a side thing. But anyway, I would go to his place. He would do the draft. He would have a couple other people over, and then we would just play against the computer, and he would pass the controller around, because I guess he didn't have like whatever, you know, thing to play live. And I would embarrass myself. I cannot keep up in 2K. So they would build a big lead. I would blow the entire lead, and then they would try to rally, and that was my purpose. Part of it is just that I'm very bad at video games in general. I guess because I didn't grow up playing quite enough of them. But yeah, I'll play a little 2K now and then. Whichever of my friends has the new FIFA, I'll go play with them. But that's about it at this point.
If you had the chance to jump back into maybe a game or two of your choice, whether it is a sports game or even something that isn't particularly sports orientated, is there something you feel like you'd like to try?
I played a lot of GTA in college, was the other one. And
oh, yeah.
GTA is incredible. And I know there hasn't been, you know, a new franchise of those in a while, but or at least not that I know of. I love those games a lot. I love it's sort of sick in a way, but the freedom you have in those games is,
yeah,
and especially 10, 15 years ago when that was relatively new, was mind-boggling. And from my understanding, the other Rockstar games like Red Dead Redemption have a similar level of like,
yeah,
endlessness. Mm-hmm. And I haven't dipped my toe into it, because I think I would get completely taken and just give myself over to it. What I really want is to like go over to a friend's place and watch them play Red Dead Redemption. I just want to, I want to see what it's like, and I haven't done that yet. But any of those super open world games where you can, you know, run around killing things and driving things and all that, I've had a lot of fun with those. And GTA in particular, I wasted a lot of time. Got me through some dark times in college, if we're being honest. Something like that, I think I would love to pick up again if time and, you know, my own attention span weren't as much of a variable.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, if especially for a big game like GTA, I feel like that might be a bit of an issue given your current sort of situation. But I guess we should probably jump over to the game itself that you had chosen, that you feel was most influential for you. And we had probably just mentioned it a couple of minutes ago. It was NBA Live 2000. This, in fact, was the one with Tim Duncan on the cover. Mm-hmm. When was sort of the first time that you'd played this game that you remember? Was it you got this on the PS1?
It was right when it came out, which must have been, you know, late 99. So I was 10 years old, and a really, really big NBA fan, you know, and I had played earlier versions of NBA Live at friends' houses and played NBA Hang Time and stuff like that. But this was the first game that was totally my own on my own system. And, I was completely, you know, my mom would only let me play so much at a time, but it was the thing I looked forward to every single day. I had so much fun with that game.
It's an interesting sort of situation with a lot of the NBA sort of games, EA games in general, where they're sort of being released the year before the year on the cover. As a kid, I was always like, so confused that they'd release the game like, well, a, like year, a year early.
It's like car models, right? They're trying to make it sound new for as long as possible.
Exactly. The big thing that I guess was probably being modeled on the Live 2000 boxes was the addition of Michael Jordan. This is probably something that I wasn't aware of as a kid, but obviously he had a lot of his own sort of games himself and probably had an exclusivity contract allowing him to sort of be removed from these sorts of games. So was this something that probably influenced your decision to get the game, or was it something that you found as quite a nice surprise?
Yeah, that wasn't something I knew about at the time. And I actually haven't put together, I guess, since he had retired, that they were fine with that. Because he was in the game. Let me back up. This was not an incentive for me to buy the game. But upon getting it, I realized that, you know, he wasn't on the Bulls in the game because he was out of the league at that point. He was in the game as just like a solitary, teamless figure who you could play one-on-one, which ended up being a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm a Knicks fan. I grew up hating MJ. And so you could create a player or go be Allen Houston or whatever guy you wanted to be. And just they had this like cage street court setting.
Yes, that's
and
right.
you could play one-on-one against anyone, I think. But like the boss was Jordan. And you could play, I think it was like ones and twos. And in a variety of different sort of street court settings, and it was nighttime. I can still like hear the sounds of it. And they had this one-on-one feature that was, it was kind of just like a jerry-rigged version of all of the mechanics and physics from the actual game. It's not like they gave you a ton of extra, you know, special stuff you could do in the one-on-one setting in a way that I think they would now. So it looked kind of ugly. But at the time, it was pretty cool.
I remember because I was sort of in my research, I was looking at a whole bunch of videos of the game, and the opening sort of video was sort of this weird 3D street like setting, but it was sort of like actual footage of Kevin Garnett like practicing free throws in sort of like this unnamed Timberwolves jersey, and then it sort of blew into this massive, huge, like jazz rock, like opera of sorts. That was all of these highlights from the 2000 season. It was almost like reminiscent of like the NBA on TNT sort of opening themes for them at the moment. It was really trying to evoke the sort of same feeling. You must have turned your PlayStation on and been sort of absolutely blown away by it.
Dude, I had not thought about that intro until you just described it, and like that shit got me fired up. I love that. I forgot it. Yeah, it starts with like a train whistle in the background, and KG shooting by himself, and then it's this super fast paced montage of all sorts of highlights and things. It was just like a really well put together game, and again, as someone who hadn't played a lot of games, and even as someone who had played a little bit of games, I feel like that one set a little bit of a precedent that, as I understand, is still very much much more of a thing in 2K, where there was more cinematic stuff going on. You know, the loading screen wasn't just a loading screen. They got a lot of really good music in it. It had a Naughty by Nature song was in the intro, after that.
I was literally about to mention the very small soundtrack, which I think only had about four songs on it, but the addition of Hip Hop Hooray by Naughty by Nature probably escalated to the pinnacle of NBA Live soundtracks. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm sure games had soundtracks before that, but maybe it's just because that's the one I had, but I remember being taken with how much, you know, sort of pomp and circumstance there was around the actual gameplay and how much work they put into, you know, embellishing what could otherwise just be a, you know, turn it on, press start and go type of experience.
I think the other thing as well, like you were sort of mentioning, was the sort of the cinematic sort of feel to the start of a game. And this is something that obviously now a lot of the 2K games are absolutely killing with their sort of commentary team and the sort of graphics that they use for a lot of their sort of pre-match histrionics, I guess. But because I'm sort of reading it now, Don Poirier is the play-by-play announcer with Reggie Theus on color commentary.
Yeah, Reggie Theus, yeah.
That must have been sort of a unique feeling, because obviously at that time, a lot of games probably didn't have a lot of commentary. It must have felt like a real sort of authentic experience for you.
Yes, exactly. That's another part of it I hadn't even thought of. And I, you know, when you go back and look at it, it looks really stupid, but there was a crowd, and it was just sort of a massive throbbing like blob of a crowd.
A couple of pixels.
But, yeah, a couple of pixels. But I just remember that being more, it was like, oh, they're, you know, they went through the trouble of making all these people. And yes, all the people were just kind of like lifting their arms at the same time. but I, at that moment, it was really cool.
Yeah, the other big major part in the Live 2000 game was the addition of franchise mode, which is another thing which has now sort of taken a lot of the NBA games by storm. But I'm going to assume this is probably where you sunk most of your time into.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Like I said, you know, that was something outside of the cartoony backyard games. That wasn't something I'd gotten to play around with before. And so, yeah, and as sort of a nerdy kid, I was, because this is long before, you know, smart trading or whatever they call it in 2K, like any of the safeguards that would prevent you from just, you know, making a superstar all-star team. Yeah. None of that existed, but I did it myself because I was a little NBA nerd and I was going to make a realistic team. And so I remember very distinctly that I had, I think you could actually like pick a unique and unused like logo and name and stuff. Like you could.
Oh, you can make like a custom team or something.
I think so. I can't remember exactly, but I think they had sort of a stock, you know, just stupid mascots and,
yeah,
you know, quick little designs that they had. I'm pretty sure you could do that. And so I had one of those and I had a team with, I don't remember the good players on the team, but I remember that both Vontigo Cummings and Lawrence Funderburk were on my team. That was my like starting shooting guard and power forward. And those are not good players.
Yeah.
Not in their era, not ever. No one remembers them. But they were on my team, and I must have also had some sort of star. But it was them. And then I also, they had a create a player thing, which was also very new to me. And I struck a deal. So the TV in my house that was hooked up to the PlayStation was in the basement, and that's also where the treadmill was, and my dad wanted to use that a lot of the time to like just watch something while he was running on the treadmill. But I struck a deal with my dad that I made him in create a player and I put him on the Knicks, and I would run my own father at point guard for the New York Knicks, and he would run on the treadmill and watch himself play for the Knicks.
You'd get the sort of coaching. No, run that way. No, play, yeah, this, exactly. Play this play. Oh my God, Mr. Rosenthal is the man running the show for the New York Knicks.
Yeah.
Was there any sort of particular teams or moments that you'd sort of had, especially like a big heated rivalry? I'm assuming obviously a lot of Eastern Conference battles were duked out in that basement.
You know what's funny is no one ever came over and played that game with me. I would always go over to other people's houses to play the sports kind of games. And the other thing about me is, in whether it was at home just making a franchise or, you know, messing around, or playing at someone else's place, I'm never the Knicks in video games.
Oh, okay.
Partially because for most of my life, the Knicks have had dog shit rosters, and so you don't want to be them in video games. Yeah. But it was always, especially as a little kid who like didn't get to see a lot of the Western Conference, because if you grow up on the East Coast in America, then those games are on at, you know, 10:30 at night, and you just can't stay up and watch them. It was always exciting to be Western Conference teams, you know, and to like get a better look at those rosters in a way that you would only be able to do a couple times a year in real life, you know, to be the Blazers or the Sonics or the Nuggets. in part because those tended to be fun and good teams when I was younger, but also just because they were kind of like exotic to me in a way that's kind of funny.
Oh man, the Sonics still feel exotic to me, given that I'd sort of really gotten into basketball after they, I guess, ceased to be a team. So you were living in a very cherished childhood, I guess. But
yes.
The one thing that I have just noticed about the features in the game that probably wasn't available to you because it was more or less on the PC version was face in the game. And this is obviously something that became more apparent with a lot of the sort of almost late 2000s, early teens, like FIFA and NBA games. You can actually sort of superimpose your face onto a player, which... I'm not sure you ever got the chance to do, but I'm assuming you would have had so much fun with that sort of feature if it was available to you.
No, yeah, it was because I think they advertised it, or I don't think it wasn't on the box, but there was some indication that such a thing existed, but it was nowhere to be found in PlayStation, obviously, and that was very disappointing. I'm very, you know, as soon as we hang up, I want to go look at what that looked like, because. I remember when, in what must have been 2013 or 2014, when 2K came out with their, you know, exciting new version of that, it was such a mess for so long. I actually, I was writing, you know, blog posts for SB Nation at the time, and one of the hardest laughs I have ever had in my entire life was assembling a blog post of just that first night in 2014 or whatever it was of the... you know, put your face in the game feature on 2K. It was so bad, and it was so hysterically bad. And people were uploading their faces and having like six ears or three mouths or mouths on top of their foreheads. But yeah, I never, so it must have been to do that 15 or 14 years before that must have been incredible. And I would love to see what that looked like.
Well, the things that I'd sort of thought about considering how old it must have been was one, being able to do it on a computer instead of being on your phone is probably going to be a little bit easier to do, and probably wouldn't create the sort of weird glitches that you've probably just mentioned. But also, the second point is, in 1999, to do that on a PC must have taken 6 months just to upload a photo. Like, assuming it probably wouldn't have been like that sort of fast-paced as it is now, so...
Right, because your computer didn't have a camera on it. You would have had to... I don't know how you put a photo onto a computer in 1999.
Yeah. Oh, man. That must have been something unique. But, yeah, I mean, the game in general has obviously shaped you in a lot of ways, sort of forming your, I guess, formative years. But in general, it seems like... Do you feel like this game sort of really kick-started that love of basketball or sort of really invigorated it?
Yeah, it was one more supplement to something I was getting into. You know, you can get a certain amount of love and knowledge from watching the games and another certain amount from reading. You know, I was someone, like I said, I was a big nerd as a kid, and I was poring over box scores in the newspaper, and I would buy the NBA Register, you know, the book with all the stats in it every year from the Sporting News. But here was another thing where you could get to know the rosters and really like stoke that sort of nerdy love of the game Yeah, you know, like I said, those teams that I wasn't necessarily as familiar with, you got to know the players a little bit better. And it's, especially as a kid, it's very satisfying. And there's a really special sort of electrifying feeling to then go to a game or flip on the TV and be like, oh, I know who these people are. I know where they went to college. I know how tall they are and what number they wear. And I was the kind of, you know, I'm also very into animals and very into taxonomy. And I just like having the full scope of knowledge of something like that, to feel like I know everything about everyone and I have all of this trivial information cataloged in my head. And that's part of what appealed to me about sports as a little kid. And so a game like that allowed me to pursue that, and to make that feel even more whole.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'd sort of really progressed in, especially with a lot of the games that I had played, even the 2Ks now and sort of sporting games maybe 6 or 7 years ago. But that sort of feeling of creating that alternate universe where you are, you know, the owner of the Phoenix Suns, or you are the manager of Manchester United, or whatever it was. It's that sort of alternate universe where you have done something successful, and it just sort of allows you to escape that sort of feeling. And I felt like that was always the big thing for sports games for me, especially in like a franchise mode where I was able to make the decisions, and I'd sort of think about, you know, what would happen if this sort of trade went through. And that was always that sort of curiosity that really got the better of me. So I guess in the same way, for you, it must have been like that real feeling of being able to sit in the seat and really make the call.
Yeah. And I think this is less true of basketball games than it is of particularly soccer and football games. But you can get to know the sport. You can understand the tactics a little better. Especially if you're relatively unfamiliar. I think FIFA and Madden taught me more about soccer and football than actually watching those sports, whether it's just getting to know players or understanding how the game works and just how people move and, you know, how coaches call plays and what plays make sense and what, you know, lineups and alignments make sense in different ways. You know, basketball is so much more fluid. And also I think that basketball video game gameplay is still not quite approaching what it looks like on the actual court, but FIFA looks like a soccer game sometimes and vice versa.
Yeah. Do you feel like you would be in your current position had you not sort of played those basketball games in your past, or do you still feel like you'd be writing about that love of basketball and sort of sport in general, regardless of whether you'd played those games as a kid?
I think I was obsessed enough that by that point that, and so many other things had to just sort of happen and break and happen to me for me to end up doing anything in sports for a living. This was never the plan, but it was a big part of it. It was certainly a big part of it. Anything that kept me, you know, invested and caring about the game was something that contributed to me eventually feeling like I cared enough and like I had enough expertise to ever, you know, pursue covering something like that for a living.
Well, I get the feeling that is pretty much all the time that we have. Seth, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. It's probably the best time to wrap it up. But do you have any social channels that listeners should be following you on?
I'm Seth_Rosenthal on Twitter. I'm not sure I recommend following me on Twitter at this point, but if you go to YouTube, SB Nation on YouTube is what we've been talking about. That's where my videos are. That is probably a more rewarding experience than following any of us on Twitter. This has been a lot of fun, and I'm excited to now go find a copy of NBA Live 2000 and fire that back up.
I think there may have been a couple of emulator websites that had NBA Live 2000 on, I think, N64. So I'll have to try and link you when we finish this
call.
All right. But Seth, once again, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, and best of luck trying to hunt down an NBA Live 2000 copy.
Thank you very much.